Welcome to the Get Together.
All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. We have so much news to talk about today. It's a news day on TGT. It's a news day. It's my song and also my dance.
I love these little songs. I feel like we need like a mixtape of all the songs. That's an idea stolen from the one, the only Sean Robbins firm of Vox Media's Today Explained.
Oh.
And they made like a playlist of all of the music that they made across their whatever, probably like 500 or 600 episodes in.
Wow.
And it's amazing.
That's cool.
It's so good. I'm going to find one song for you that I literally go back to and listen to. And I was like, this song is genuinely really good.
Was this stuff that was composed for the podcast? Or is this like bullshit that someone like is like, it's a T-Day, news and Tuesday kind of thing?
It's like, it starts from where you are. But then they spent more time actually refining it. And I think
that's good.
He, the host, Sean Ramos firm, and then one of the producers, whose name I cannot remember right now. Like are both like they're both musicians and they both enjoy, you know, mucking around on music software, and so they make like they actually produce
that's
music
awesome
versus the fun ditties that you throw out there. That doesn't mean we shouldn't produce this album. It'll be a bunch of 30-second shorts
when we get to our 150 episodes or something.
Yeah, and then we'll push them into TikTok and they'll all turn into memes and it'll be great. We'll be rich in theory.
The end. It's that simple, everyone. No, seriously, we have so much news to talk about today. News that we have found, talked about in the office over the last week in technology and theater.
Technology, theater, NFTs.
Someone will come up with a category for all this shit we talk about someday.
One day. Yeah, what would be that category? Whatever. Musings for another day.
Yeah, creators. Creators, right? Creators. Yeah. Creators gonna create.
Creators gonna create. You cannot stop them. What did you say about musical theater the other day? You're like, people who write musical theaters are gonna fucking write them regardless.
Yes, absolutely.
If you want them to or if you don't want them to, they 100%. Cannot stop themselves.
We will be sitting at home. I don't write musicals. We'll sit at home. We will write those musicals whether you pay us or not.
Wait, on the topic of news, and this can be cut. Who cares? the two women who wrote the unofficial Bridgerton musical.
Oh yeah,
didn't they just win?
They fucking won the Grammy, y'all. This is a property that did not have the rights secured at the time that they put it out on TikTok. It has not been on Broadway. It is made by two young women. It was on TikTok. And it won the best musical album.
So awesome. And just like, you can't stop them. They're going to create the thing.
Exactly.
No permission asked. No permission needed.
Exactly.
And it's like, this is fun. Oops, now we're famous.
Yeah, now you have to give us the rights and options.
Yeah. And those songs, if you haven't listened to them, they're so good.
They're hits.
So good.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed to say I learned about them through like a... like NPR podcast or something.
What's wrong with that?
It was like a Planet Money or something like that.
But that's the hope and dream, right? Yeah. For theater people, is that like it shouldn't just be
that it goes mainstream.
Yeah, speaking to people who love musicals, I want the Joes of the world to like learn about the Bridgerton musical through their NPR podcast. Think, I don't know, I don't think I like theater, or I'm not sure, and go listen to Bridgerton, be like, what the fuck,
this is fun.
It slaps, and then talk about it on their own podcast. That's like the dream.
Here we go. Propagating content through the internet spheres.
Yeah.
But yeah, check it out. It's cool. It won things.
Yay.
Does it, wait, real question. Does it need the rubber stamp of the Grammys?
I mean, it will make them richer, right? Because it's just, it becomes an IP business, mm-hmm. right? Like they get the option from Netflix. They make the musical. Now it would never have, I don't think, probably have gone to Broadway, because most producers would say, in a traditional producing form, you don't have the rights secured already from Netflix or whomever owns them. Oh, I'm not touching this.
Yeah.
Come back and talk to me when you have the rights. And for two young women, you know, to go get the rights from Netflix, that's fucking complicated. The Oscar just like brings that brick wall crashing down, right? And it's just like automatic,
it's a
guess.
Validator.
Yeah.
So in some world,
the Oscars,
could just,
the
like,
Grammy, you know,
they
I mean?
Could stay in the TikTok sphere and just like never try to breach.
Totally.
And potentially build up enough like
yeah.
credit and I don't know, other forms of sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? Collateral? I don't know, something. Mm. So yeah, I guess the Grammy's a rubber stamp, but it's still a helpful rubber stamp.
Absolutely.
I'm excited about the world in which the Grammy is no longer, like, people are like, I don't care.
Yeah.
I'm doing this thing over here. I've got 150, you know, million people around the world who love my thing that are each giving me a dollar. Like, you can go fuck
Hell
yourself, Grammys.
Yes. I got $150 million.
Literally, $1 each.
Just imagined it all under my mattress.
Warren Buffett would be upset if you kept it all under your mattress.
I know.
All right. Well, news. In addition to Bridgerton, which was a last-minute throw-in, y'all, that was live.
He's getting good at this.
So fun. I just let my brain go wherever it wants. Sometimes it's good.
I love
Sometimes
when
it's not so good. So earlier this week, we got a very fun newsletter from, what the heck is this thing even called?
Every Two? Is that what it was?
Oh yeah, it's called Every, which is just so confusing for trying to like search that on the internet.
Oh God.
But yeah, the URL to get to it is every.to. And it is a bundle of newsletters and podcasts by, you know, just really interesting creators and or business people that are born in the sort of current digital age. You know, they're all, I don't know, in their like mid-20s to mid-30s sort of vibe. And they just like love to write and theorize about the internet. And it's super fun. And so this subdivision of Every is called Divinations. And the writer of this article, Nathan Bechez, is, yeah, a student of the internet. I think he worked at General Assembly, and then he was at Substack, and then he is now writing this and was a co-founder of Every, or maybe he's the president. I don't know. He's got a title. And this article, and kind of like every time they send me a newsletter, I'm like, well, this is crazy. and really quickly, I was like, Jess, you got to read this. And the title of it is Recursive Publishing, and it's this idea of how the publishing model has changed from the old system, which was more linear, where you have, you know, a New York Times that has an editorial staff that is making editorial decisions and assigning stories and helping to guide the forces of what we consume, what we find interesting, what works, what doesn't work, what's a hit, what's popular, what goes. But the internet, where all of a sudden it was like really easy and really cheap to create lots and lots and lots of content, changed all of that. You know, you no longer needed the distribution house and the newspaper trucks to actually get the content out to the people. Anyone could create a blog and be like, here are my thoughts. They're not necessarily good. They're not necessarily bad. They just are. And then layer on top of that, the social media networks and sort of discovery on the internet. And all of a sudden, algorithms, no longer humans making decisions, but rather clicks and likes and engagements and things like that. And they started to build these recursive loops where a story or a post or a thing would get exposed to a couple of people on Facebook or TikTok or Instagram. And if it did well, you know, lots of clicks, lots of likes, lots of shares, some complicated layering of algorithms, it would get shown to more people. And those people would click it and like it and whatever it. And that would get shown to more people and get shown to more people and more and more and more and more, which puts the sort of benefit on the side of just creating lots and lots and lots of content to potentially win that recursive game, win that algorithm. And it's sort of a departure from the linear style, the New York Times example from before, because it doesn't really involve a human curator in the same way. And it lets the algorithms kind of take over and expose what is or isn't interesting. And I thought this was super interesting because of the way that it has, you know, pushed political division, but also surface things that would not have otherwise gotten attention.
Hashtag, you know, Bridgerton musical.
Hashtag Bridgerton musical. What New York Times publisher or anyone, right?
Can you imagine?
Is going to be like, this is a great idea. Yeah. We're going to give you a bunch of money to do this thing that is going to get us sued. Let's go. Yeah. It's amazing. Right? They're not going to take that risk. And that's at the core of this article as well, is the idea that the individual inside of one of these platforms, a TikTok, a YouTube, a Facebook, can take a bit more risk. Mm. Where a New York Times or an established brand or an established entity just can't afford to take that same risk. Mm-hmm. And that a algorithm is going to reward some of those riskier takers, because we as humans, we like new, we like novel, we like risque, we like risky, we like all the riskies, risk-ass. I hope you cut that part.
I will absolutely not.
So the article goes like far wider and far deeper than I can without just reading it back to you, because Nathan Bechez is smart. But Jez, you had a chance to read this article. You know, what stood out to you as you were reading through it?
I mean, my number one takeaway was like the seismic shift you have made as a person who is terrified of the biases of algorithms to like being like, oh my God, this is so interesting. Let's talk about what the potential and possibilities are of this.
Ooh, I'm still afraid of those robots. don't mix it. I think it's interesting. Still terrified of the robots. This makes me maybe more terrified of the robots. Because like, this is what is to be terrified about. Like, who's deciding what is and isn't interesting? And what is it based on? And that's like the sort of the joking YouTube rabbit hole that you can go down where it's like, oh, I was watching, you know, Gangnam Style, and all of a sudden I'm like being militarized into, you know, right-wing propaganda. And it's like, I've only watched 10 videos. How did I get here?
I just learned something about you that I didn't really fully realize. So my friend Audrey, who I think you've heard me talk about, who is a very famous scholar and author on Indian Muslim, Hindu Muslim relations across history. She's the kind of gal that'll just like fucking pick the other side of the fight to fight with you, which I love. And I've known her since I was 10. And I'm thinking, as you just described all that, about how you told me on Clubhouse that like if you have human curators, it's against the point of the system. And I was like, oh, he really likes this system. But now I realize what's going on.
Cognitive dissonance. All things can be true at once.
Oh, man. Okay, so let's come back to like that sort of yin and yang of the what you win, what you get, what you lose in relying on the algorithm part of this process, this recursive publishing system. Let's throw that away for a second. What I couldn't help but thinking was so exciting, right, is something I talk about a lot here in the office, which is just that there is so much creativity and incredible creators everywhere that are untapped, unused, you know what I mean? Like unsurfaced. And to your point you made earlier, like we keep creating. Like it doesn't pay us, don't pay us. It doesn't fucking matter. We're going to keep creating, right? Like I'm going to own my own two companies finally, and I'm still going to be making a movie on the side. Do you know what I mean? Like it just never stops.
Is that a spoiler? Is that a prediction? Is that a thing?
Maybe.
All right. Easter egg for everyone. Remember this moment.
Do you know what I mean? There's just like a whole engine of like value that is just not being surface tapped. And this feels like, just like a sluice through which to put it, you know,
I have no idea what that word is.
A sluice. It's loose. It narrows. It's I don't know.
I'm going to define the word by just pronouncing it slightly more fun. Sluice.
My favorite example of a sluice is a pea sluice for a woman for camping.
Oh, that got me there. Thank you.
There you go. You're welcome.
I now know what you're talking about.
Right? So it's like a narrow. It takes a wide opening and puts and funnels people, ideas, whatever it is, through it and into a narrower place where we can maybe pick things out. You know what I mean? Mm. And I just think that's what's most exciting about this is like it gives a chance to what I care about most, which is for there to be more great art.
Yeah, I like that. And I think something you said earlier in Twitter Spaces, also spoiler, we switched from Clubhouse to Twitter Spaces.
Yeah, I said Clubhouse, but I didn't
we'll
mean
see
it.
What happens. That you said where it was, okay, what is the hybrid of these two worlds, right? We don't want pure robots deciding what we like and don't like because we're just going to all watch Gangnam Style forever then.
What was the Gangnam Style? How did that happen?
I don't know. It was so good. They broke YouTube's algorithm.
Oh, my God.
Nor will we have just the pure, like, one person decides what we think is interesting. It'll be somewhere in the middle.
Right.
And how are you using the sluices of the internet to funnel all the potential good things to a human or to some set of humans or a collective of humans, you know, for some, a little bit more humanity in the decision making.
Yeah.
It makes me think of, do you remember the podcast, The Daily?
Yeah.
I'm just going to hit New York Times all day.
Love
on
it.
This. I like listened to The Daily for a while. Loved hearing Michael Barbaro say his own name at the beginning of that show.
That's a good name.
It is a good name.
It's a good name.
And then was just like, I'm done with this show. I don't care.
Wow, hard turn. I didn't expect us to go there.
And what I realized was that that sluicing was happening. I don't know if I can verbify that. it was happening. Like, I didn't need to listen to the daily for the best episodes or the most interesting episodes for them to come to me. Like, I had a network of friends, a network of websites and newsletters and things that I already interacted with.
Oh, interesting.
Where the best versions of the most relevant, you know, episodes of the daily
on.
Would make their way back to me.
Ah, interesting.
And so I'm like, cool. Thank you, other people, for doing the work of listening to all of these episodes. Thank you, Michael Barbaro and your team, for creating said episodes. I am not subscribing to your podcast.
I have a question for you, though, because I think this is one of the potential challenges you have to solve for if we want to embrace a recursive publishing model for creators. I don't know if you've noticed this. I don't know if it has happened in your world, so you'll have to tell me. But like, I have noticed slowly but surely across the last 5 years, I no longer see recommendations for, like, you know, when someone would watch that episode of the TV and everybody was talking about it. And probably because of this recursive publishing, it got in front of me. Mm-hmm. But now it's so, my guess is it's so fragmented and we have so many options. Not enough of us are watching the same thing on the same day to let it surface. So I've like distinctly noticed that I very rarely get posts in front of me that are, my friends are like, oh, that episode of, you know, Drag Race is the exception because everybody I know watches Drag Race on Friday nights. You know what I mean? But that season premiere of whatever, or that podcast episode, I have noticed it has fallen off pretty dramatically across the last 5 years.
Oh, that's interesting. I wonder, like, yeah, what's underlying that? Is it more content is just out there that's fighting for your attention?
Mm-hmm.
Are you spending less time in front of devices? Probably not. We're all spending way more time in front of devices.
I think I am spending less time.
Oh, mm-hmm. Hey, good for you.
I know.
That's great.
Yeah.
Or is it like, you know, Facebook's algorithm being like, we're deprioritizing also X, Y, and Z because we want them to pay us money. You know, Netflix shows get deprioritized because we want them to buy ads on us. You know, whatever it might be. Yeah, I think I'm willing to take that risk with you know, the Pivot podcast. Sorry, Kara Swisher. Love you. Don't listen to your podcast anymore. I actually think she's rad, but like, I just, the best episodes make their way to me and I do not need to be on the bleeding edge of that frontier.
Right, right.
And I think that's another part that's important here is that someone has to be on the bleeding edge for this system to work. Someone has to be on the Reddit new page upvoting things for the rest of us to eventually find on the
Wikipedia editors.
Like, someone's got to be
God
grinding
bless you
it
all.
Out. And we can't all be at every front line.
Yeah, right.
And I, you know, have to choose which front lines I want to be on. And I don't want to be on the New York Times front line. I don't want to be on, you know, the Pivot podcast front line.
Yeah.
And I'm okay with that. Mm-hmm. But I'll be on a front line somewhere else. Like, right, I'm going to hold up my end of the bargain.
Yeah.
And I'm going to propagate the content that I
napkin
think
math
is interesting. Yeah, yeah. I mean, Every.to, you're welcome, listeners.
Hey.
It's pretty cool. Hey. If you're interested in the business and the economics of the internet, hit it up.
I want to go back to the hybrid concept that you were talking about, because something you were talking about gave me a new thought that I'm actually excited to reference, something that has been in our orbit for a while that we haven't talked about. So you were saying, like, what is that hybrid? How do we take the work of the algorithm, combine it with the humans? And we've been talking a lot about, like, what that would mean when you were, like, basically setting up a DAO, because you got to write that code in the beginning, you know? And then, like, you can't change it unless you start another DAO. Like, you have to scrap the whole thing. So there's, like, a lot of thought that has to go into that. And I think a lot of that thought has to be, especially in our world where we're talking a lot about, like, what is next? Is creator-led profitable businesses next, right? Because I think that's like kind of what we're getting at is like, could recursive publishing enable that world and combined with, you know, blockchain? And I thought to myself, oh, you'd have to make sure you don't write these rules to say, like, we have this algorithm that surfaces this stuff because our whole goal is to make money, right? We were talking about this earlier. I don't know, really. I'm just talking off the top of my head. But like, we want a company that is profitable, but also has this maybe side mission that is like also just surfacing art and putting art into the world is valuable. And that made me think of Built to Sell, which is this book that did you ever read it?
I have not yet read it.
Okay. So I recently read it because our friends recommended we read it, just in terms of like,
I literally bought this book as a joke because Jess was like, I hate books like that.
I do.
Best $7 I ever spent.
Well, anyway, I appreciated some things, you know, in this book, but somewhere three quarters of the way, halfway through this book, the mentor businessman, who they're just like fucking hitting you over the head. He's very successful. He has 16 houses, right? He only works for 3 hours a day, right? It's like,
he's got a secret family in Kansas City.
Absolutely. It's very heavy handed in that way. He says, he gives tips at the end of the chapter to the guy who's learning from him how to build his business to sell. And is one of the things he says about halfway through the book is, businesses exist to make money. The end. Every decision has to be about that. And I thought when I read that, I was like, that just cannot be true. It just can't. Like, and I know, like, this is a whole conversation with shareholder versus stakeholder, you know, and all of that good stuff. But like, I am not on this earth to just make a thing that makes money at all costs, mm-hmm. right? Like, yeah. That is, I don't know about you. I don't know about y'all listening. That is not my path. It's just not. And which is why I'm glad I'm alive right now, because we'd be real fucked if it was like 20, 30 years ago, the 80s.
For real. But I sometimes wish that I was that type of person.
Yeah. Oh, I definitely
that I was
I
like,
do.
Oh,
yes,
man, 100%. I could really take advantage of those people and steal all of their money legally.
Or just like be like, sorry, I have to fire everyone on my team. I got to make money.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
No, I know. But anyway, that just makes me think about like how this is an opportunity to build a new kind of business that is shareholder sort of centric in some ways, and to be able, and which is the only reason it could be a creator led profitable business, because mm-hmm. by and large, creators are not going to buy in to a DAO that's built to just make money.
I have an interesting wrench to throw into that.
Okay.
Which is, right? Like, oh, man. Maybe they're like parallel paths here. So okay. Stick with me for a second. But like if the premise of the, we're going to, yeah, let's talk inside of a DAO, right? It's a collective of artists who are coming together, pooling time, energy, resources, whatever. I sell a piece of art and some percentage goes back into the community mm-hmm. that helps to sustain the creation of more art, because that's the goal of the DAO.
Yes.
But I think like there's a layer underneath that that's like the theory there is that we will make enough money somehow to continue this going. So yep. like the money and the art are it's yinging and yanging.
I love that. Yeah.
Right. Like they like kind of have to coexist.
Yeah.
And if you were to prioritize one over the other, it might kill the opposite one.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If it's all about like, you know, it's like no artistic integrity to some weird nth degree such that no one will ever sell anything because, you know, people who have money are bad or something. Yeah. I don't know. Then it's like, okay, well, this whole thing falls apart. Like, because we live in said capitalist society.
Totally.
Where it's like, got rent to pay, I don't grow my own food, so I got to go buy it somewhere.
But don't you think that's what I think that is why we haven't had businesses like this before? Because like you have the 80s, I'm poor 80s. I'm just picking on the 80s today.
Grin Gecko, you can suck
yeah,
it.
Yeah, exactly. Bonfire of the Vanities. Let's just split ourselves into the binaries that existed. I am the guy and built to sell. Businesses were made to make money. The end. You have to make every choice, and if you do make every choice based on making money, you will end up with 16 houses and a secret family in Kansas City and a yacht, right? Yay. That's that side.
The American dream right there.
Yeah, exactly. So that's the people who, those are business people. And then there are mm-hmm. creators, which we have been having a lot of conversations about this lately, right? Like, this is so tangibly true in theater, although I think it's true in a lot of other arts, that there was for centuries this idea that it is a craft and you must be a craftsperson and you must not do anything but your craft. If mm-hmm. I am an actor, like even for me 10 years ago, I couldn't tell someone I produced, directed, acted, wrote, and did voiceover. They'd be like, what the fuck are you talking about? No, you don't. And you can't, because you literally can't be a great actor unless you only act.
Like, you have to be hyper-focused on the acting. Yeah. Otherwise, you're not serious. We don't even want to talk to you.
Exactly. And it's not possible. And so then that's why we never had this middle balance business that you're talking about. But now there's this new generation of, I think business people got to this balance, closer to this balance side faster. But I think creators are starting to learn and grow up in a culture in which they can study acting or art, visual art, or, you know, and put their 10,000 bazillion hours in and learn how to run a business. Mm. You know, that I do believe that balance can exist and that it can be built by creators instead of the model we've been so stuck in, which is kind of has to do with your black hole theory that you wouldn't tell anybody about, right? Which is like, it has to start with the money first, mm-hmm. like the money people. And that's where everything gets fucked up, because then we're back to our built to sell guy, even if they didn't mean to.
Yeah. We're just right back into that world of like, well, as long as I extract as much money as possible, even if the whole system dies in the process, I still have my secret family.
And I like that there's like kind of a collaborative relationship that's necessary between the folks who kind of straddle both worlds, the business people who just want to make money, the mm-hmm. creators who just want to create. Like, this in my mind creates room for all of them and the necessity that they work together.
Yeah. And that is really interesting. Like, when you were saying like collaborate, and we've talked about collectives, and maybe we use the word socialism at some point. And how
just
how,
dropped that. Yeah,
how separate that is from like, you know, American individualism, right? Yeah. And our Gordon Gekko in Built to Sell is like, I don't care if everyone else dies. I will be rich.
Yeah.
Right? I don't care if this whole thing falls apart. I will be rich.
Oh, man.
And that, like, the model we're trying to build is one in which profiteering in that way mm-hmm. and like pushing to the extreme of capitalizing the community of people creating art mm-hmm. will actually kill it. So it like the maximum point is in the balance, mm-hmm. right? It's almost like supply demand curves,
yes.
right?
Yes.
It's like there's a balance in the middle, right? If you just made your product $1 billion, no one will buy it, so you're fucked. But if you make it $0, you can't produce enough of them to make a profit. So it's like finding that right. balance where it's like we're creating art and we're making money. But if they fall out of balance, then we lose money.
Which this is a really like crazy swing, and I will only take 2 seconds to do it. But I really love that idea. And maybe that makes me like a Bernie socialist. I'm not really sure. But it's been on my mind with all this Amazon stuff, right? Like, I don't know about you, but I, as someone who was asked the other night, what is the vision for your company? And I was like, I want to fucking own all of the live digital space. It is huge. I want to, you know, or like the majority of it. As a person who has a big vision for a company, I am not interested in and terrified in the what is coming to light about Amazon, right? Which in the last week has been sort of the firing of the guy who organized the unionization in Staten Island. Today, all of the words that have been blocked from the company chat.
Oh, did I you didn't see hear that? About this, no.
There's just like a fucking list of like 40 words that are all, you know, union, racist, like all associated words that you just like literally can't use in the company chat. And I keep thinking this week I've been really like asking myself what I want.
Yeah.
Because I don't want that. I don't want to build something that ends up like that, you know?
Yeah. That's do you have like a theory on sort of why an Amazon doesn't work? Right? Why they have to resort to these sort of draconian measures where they're outlawing literal words?
Well, I think it's likely. I'm interested to see what you think about this, because I don't know that I have any expertise to have an opinion on this. But I think it's likely it's too big. It's so big. It's not a they. It's like the one person in this department of 600 million people mm-hmm. and the one person over here. And there's not enough soul or mission or checks and balance, right? To yeah. like, it's not a they. It's not Amazon. It's just like some nightmare human who was like, I know what we have to do. We'll block all these words, which feels like fucking McCarthyism, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even but they're allowed because they're a private company.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, it does feel like a like the term too big to fail came into my head.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was a big term back during the 2008 financial crisis. Yeah. Where it was like, oh no, like all of these huge organizations that are amassing resources are such a huge part of our economy
mm-hmm.
that they like if they fail, then like everybody and everything fails.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're too big to fail. Like the government has to prop them up.
Right.
The government has to save them. The auto industry,
the airlines,
Goldman Sachs, airlines,
yeah.
like, right.
Yeah.
If they go bankrupt because they run on razor thin margins or whatever the sort of economic underpinning that they couldn't survive an economic shock like the 2008 financial crisis, then it's like it's in the country's best interest for the government to bail them out with tax dollars, because it's actually far worse if we don't.
Yeah.
And it feels a bit like that, but it's actually like too big to like exist, too big to operate, too big. It's sort of it's similar to that argument of like billionaire shouldn't exist.
Right.
Like it's like it's a broken model if a billionaire can even exist. Where it's like, how did they accrue so much wealth, power, money? Wealth and money are the same thing. Like how can that happen? And is the system itself broken because of it? Because an Amazon like isn't flexible enough. It's too big to be flexible enough to actually like treat everyone in a favorable or in a humane way. And like, that's where these, you know, unions are coming into play. The employees are like, okay, great. We're making $15 an hour, which is, you know, net better than the minimum wage hasn't been raised in 30 years. And like, we have some healthcare, but like, why the fuck do we have to fight for that still?
Yeah.
And like, the argument that Amazon's making is like, well, you're already getting $15 an hour and you're already getting healthcare. Why do you need a union? And it just always makes me think like, well, if you're getting all that stuff without a union, like, imagine what you could get with the
which
union,
is why they can't say 20 to 30 words in the company chat.
Yeah. And like, imagine, yeah, why are they fighting you so hard about the union?
Yeah.
If they think that they're actually giving you a better situation, a better system, via that, yeah, that rate, which is, you know, slightly higher than the minimum wage, but probably lower than what the minimum wage should be.
Yeah.
And yeah, that they give you some version of healthcare. I don't actually know how good or bad that healthcare is, but like, it's like arguing on all these lines that are like, what are we even arguing about? Like, why aren't they making more money? Why aren't they being treated better? Why doesn't a system like Amazon succeed because it takes care of its people versus being, you know, I don't know if it currently is the most profitable or most highest market cap company anymore, but it's one of the top five, right?
Close.
Like, to get to that status, you have to, in like the current model of our sort of economic capitalist system, is like exploit labor.
Right.
Like, you just cannot pay your people. You cannot treat them as human beings. You have to get to that size to deliver things in a single day, which is still so crazy that that's even possible. Or like, you click a button and then like 2 hours later, like some thing is on your doorstep. Like, those people are just like running around. They're, what is it that like, they're like, bathroom breaks are timed. Like, the number pieces of things that they pick and put in boxes is all recorded. And they're like hyper optimized as if they're machines, but they're still human beings.
Right. Well, that's what, going back to the building a, like the idea of building a DAO for balance in terms of like the financials and the probably also the sort of mandate for, you know, putting art into the world, our hypothetical DAO. I feel like we've come back to our complicated relationship with capitalism conversation, but we haven't been here in a few episodes, so it's okay. What is attractive to me, I guess, about that is the another thing that came to light this week, which is of course like how much Jeff Bezos makes every minute compared to like it would take 6 million lifetimes or something like that for one of these employees
I
to make that.
I love all those really tangible points. Yeah, where they're like, really they try good. To put it in terms where you're like, oh, I can imagine, I can see, I can feel that that wealth and how big $100 billion is.
Yeah,
or whatever it is, $10 billion that he's worth. I have no idea what he's worth, but it's a lot.
So, and here is where you'll have to help me if this doesn't track. But where my brain goes is like, if the argument is Jeff Bezos has to be that wealthy in order to create more economic stability and opportunities, because I think that's frequently the particularly the Republican argument, not for billionaires, but just for like
trickle
business
down.
Yeah, I to me it feels like it breaks and isn't real if it's like 10 people are become really wealthy as a result of his 10 companies or whatever, you know, bad math, but and he just creates terrible economic situations for 90% of the people by being able to continue to start companies and verticals of Amazon and stuff like that. Like, that just feels like a caste system to me, like a thinly disguised caste system. And so what I think is really interesting about like a DAO built for that balance, and what I would be curious to see if it would happen, is it's not so much capping the amount everybody can make, but keeping that balance point, you know, together, no matter how it scales up or down, so that like the disparities aren't so huge.
Yeah. Like the multiplier between like what Jeff Bezos makes in a year or a minute compared to the lowest paid. Like, I feel like that's a stat I see all the time. It's like, oh yeah, the CEO of Pepsi makes 7,000% more than the lowest or medium paid worker. And like, it's like, it's that number that I'm like, wow, why is that the case? Why does that person deserve that much money?
Right.
Like, are they really worth that in some way? Like, is that person 7,000 more times productive? Is that person 7,000 more times valuable to the company that they work for?
But we know this goes back to the creator thing. Yeah. There's a million amazing creators in the world. And just because some of them don't make any money at what they do, I guarantee you does not mean they are not as valuable.
Yeah.
They just aren't in the right place or the right time or know the right rules or, you know, care enough to try to make a business out of it, right? Or not care enough to exploit labor.
Yeah. It feels like a good reality TV show in the making. Maybe it already exists. It's like the undercover boss sort of thing.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
Or the other direction, like it's like Joe Schmo or something where it's like they pretended some guy was rich.
Oh, Jesus.
Like that would be amazing. Like install me as CEO of some Fortune 500 country company. And I bet like I don't do like magnitudes worse than a CEO.
No way.
It's like I show up to the meetings, I say yes to some things. I
feel like you'd come home and I'd hate you.
I'd be really rich. Like, here's some money, do some things. Just buy my way to happiness. That's how that works, right? Money buys happiness.
Yeah, yeah, that's what I've heard.
I read that somewhere. Might have been Built to Sell.
Well, what else? We're sort of nearing the end of our time. Was there anything else on the agenda with these articles that you wanted to make sure we hit today?
My brain went towards socialism.
On Joe's agenda for the day, socialism.
Maybe it's more like democratic socialism. Not all the way there. But yeah, just back to that DAO idea. And, you know, the other article that Jess is referencing was a report by Sarah Fisher from Axios, which, fun aside, Sarah Fisher was like a salesperson at Axios.
Oh.
Who was just like really smart and really good. And someone inside of the organization was like, hey, you should just be on like the media beat. You're good at this.
That's awesome.
And like transitioned into like journalism.
That's amazing. From I being love a salesperson. That. Oh my gosh.
And she's rad. So go read Sarah Fisher at Axios. But she had an exclusive about iHeartMedia building an NFT network for podcasts, which is a really interesting idea of how do we take intellectual property and make it more accessible, maybe. I mean, that's the way that we, Jess and I, want to take it is how can we bring intellectual property into a shared system like a DAO where people then can opt to use those characters or use that intellectual property in some way to then go off and make more content and potentially make money onto it that pays back into the DAO that helps to sort of support and sustain it. And I just think it's a really cool idea of sort of like, instead of centralized ownership of an idea and all of the money sort of funneling up in like a studio system or like how, you know, Netflix and Amazon function in their studios. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, everyone by being part of and creating inside of this community gets a little piece of it and helps to sustain it, helps to keep that balance.
Oh yeah, that does make it sound, I didn't think about this in this way and like when we were talking about this earlier today, but now that I've listened to you just explain it that way, it feels like iHeart's, it's a good baby step. Like iHeart's given an assist to the systems that we want to build, right?
Yeah.
Because it still start. It, this does start with the creator of the NFT, right? And then that the next person in line is the owner of the NFT, and then iHeart sort of comes in like with the whole city and builds it around, right?
Yeah.
These two people still get paid, or however many people, if it's been resold, whatever it is. But I love that. Like it does ultimate. Like the heft of iHeart does benefit that original creator of that NFT.
Yeah. Yeah. In theory, increases the value of whatever that NFT is.
Yeah.
So yeah, socialism, DAOs, Taoism. Nope, that doesn't work.
I think we're going to ever get in trouble for just like venturing into crazy, like, well, not crazy. I don't know. Ideas like socialism and burning it all down and not real.
Do you think socialism is one of the words at Amazon that is allowed?
Oh, absolutely. I'm going to find this tweet and send it to you.
Please do.
It was really fucked up. I was just like, I really had a crisis. I was like, I don't even know. I don't want to build something like this anymore. That is like off the table, you know, where you get so big that's what starts happening is we literally can't afford for people to unionize, which like, don't get me wrong. I know I am a member of two unions. Unions can get crazy, but they also exist to like reduce the disparities, right? Like, and reward people for their work.
I would love like a history of the union to understand like, because it feels like a fight fire with fire sort of thing, right?
Unless it's like, you're Actors Equity where it's fight fire with like of broken sprinkler. Sorry, no offense, but
but like a union has to fight so tooth and nail for its members because it is fighting against a system, a economic structure, a company that is incentivized to take advantage of and to dehumanize and to treat as a cog in a wheel. So it's like, okay, how else do you fight such a beast except to fight back in the same sort of way? Like, it's a broken system. Unions are not the villain here, even if they can be a pain in the ass.
This was a really good episode, Joe. I really enjoyed talking about all this. I have a sneaky suspicion we're going to keep talking about all this.
Let's do it. I want to talk about positive and negative externalities at some point.
Okay. Make a note.
Noted.
Somewhere. You have to write it down or I won't remember, just so we're clear.
Thank you all for listening and being part of the get together.
The goal of this podcast is to bring people together and have these important conversations. So share this with someone else who's thinking about balanced businesses and creator first, creator led, creator built businesses.
Or, you know, has some insights on DAOs and or socialism and or DAOism. We didn't get into that one.
I think I'm going to start doing a graphic for our podcast, which is the week's Venn diagram. And this week's is DAO. It's like, oh, and it'll be inspired by our favorite from Wired, Chartgeist.
Chartgeist.
This week's is DAOs and Socialism. Last week was audio engineering. And I was just editing this episode. It's really weird. Anyway, I'm Jess.
I'm Joe.
We'll see you next week.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.